Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the show. It's brought to you in association with
Levi Solicitors.
Yep, they will offer you a 10% discount on your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. That sounds like a great offer to me. Do you know what's even better?
Phil Hay Monday Club discount offer.
Still can't do it.
I was reading something.
Go back to the Phil Hay Monday Club. 15% off. What are the big three?
Will's probate conveyancing.
Well done, Michael.
Big three. It doesn't matter what division you're in either. Still the big three.
They are, very much so. 15% off on those if you want to get the code for that. Head over to the Phil Hay Monday Club, which is in your YouTube feed and on your audio feed as well. Propaganda, where we find out what's been said, what's been put out in the football world across the last 7 days. Much sadness. Do we need to give a content warning for this one? This is where we're going to fully lean into the misery and the anger and the bitterness today.
I mean, these were all received...
Because we've tried to avoid it.
Yeah, these were all received ahead of the Newcastle-Leicester game, which has obviously put an extra nail in, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Because it was... I guess you're just relying on one result then, but now we need two results, three results to go for us.
Mm. Newcastle was so annoying in that match.
I didn't watch
just a score.
Did they hit, how many times did they hit the woodwork? Was it about five times?
It just, like, by the... It started off being quite entertaining because you think, oh, they're going to batter Leicester here. And then by the... As it was getting the end, it was just like, you pathetic bunch of idiots. They don't deserve to be in the Champions League, full stop, but they certainly don't after that. There should be like a ruling that says that game just denies you entry to the Champions League.
You've got to prove it again next week instead.
Yeah, they should. Yeah, it should be, it should not be confirmed until, who do they play next week?
Someone else.
Right, they've got to beat that team, otherwise they can't be allowed in.
Mm-hmm. I think. Oh, that's fair. Yeah, because they only needed a point, didn't they, to qualify. So they started accepting the point when it got towards the back end of the...
And that's it. And now we have to put up with all... It's all like Dean Smith football genius because he let Leicester have... Well, apparently he lets Leicester have... This is like when... was it...
Steve Cooper.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. The Swansea game where he reckoned he played for a 1-1 draw with an own goal in the 94th minute.
I deliberately let them have all those chances early on that they chose to miss because I knew they would.
That's how it's gone last night of, you know, Newcastle hit the bar and the post so many times. And then when it got to 90 minutes at 0-0, Leicester had 5 minutes in stoppage time of trying to win. And I was like, oh, Dean Smith's really frightened Newcastle here. But no, if they'd scored a goal in the first half, like none of that would have been relevant. That's so annoying.
I mean, I wasn't even annoyed at that result last night.
No.
Because it just went, ah, well, that makes no odds. Since someone hit bottom in my mind.
Yeah.
I know it's mathematically impossible, but I feel like we might contrive to do it on the last
day. Get a points deduction or something.
Just in some way, yeah.
Yeah, it dawned on me last night that I was like tidying the kitchen just before I went to bed and putting stuff in the dishwasher. And I thought, I'm not even bothered. I've been stressed all year about staying in the Premier League and now we're falling out of it almost certainly. I kind of went, oh, well.
And also, you look at the table, and we're on 31 points. The most we're going to get to is 34 with a pathetic goal difference. You can't look at anything this season and feel hard done to, can you? You look at our last, what is it, 9 games or something as well that we failed to win in, and you just go, oh,
there you go.
Of course.
But, still might stay up.
What's your dickhead website saying?
Even go into it.
Is it like 3% or something?
We know it's a stupidly small chance. But it's really simple, though. All that's got to happen is Everton and Leicester lose and we win.
Yeah.
And when you look over the course of a season, Everton have lost loads of games. Leicester have lost loads of games. We've lost loads of games. But they've recently won games. We have not won games recently. So
we're overdue one.
We are overdue one. And it happened last season. We needed to win and we needed results to go our way. And we hadn't won maybe, I think I remember saying this, when I was talking about we could stay up without winning another game. It had been ages at that point.
We've tried to not win another game, but...
But we did that last year as well. We went ages without getting any sort of result. We got a couple of draws here and there. And then, you know, it's very understandable, the idea of just saying, well, it's over. There's no point even bothering with Sunday. But the last day of the Premier League, the relegation battle, every time that comes up, it's never as simple as it just goes, everybody stays in the same place and it's just, you know, the games kick off and they go exactly to form. And it happens. Remember Everton versus, was it Wimbledon, where there's all the Hans Sager stuff?
1995, are you going back to?
Well, that's one classic one that people
just
go back to.
A mere 28 years ago.
But even last year with Burnley having players sent off and Brentford going down to 9 and nobody even knew, like Jesse Marsh was trying to tell our players, they've only got 9. And all our players look around going, what do you mean? Nobody knew that Sergei Canos had been sent off.
He's doing German again. That's the other man.
Well, so the last day is always a day where there is madness is available. And for all the permutations, I know it's very, 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 very slim. But when you just drill down to what has to happen, Leeds win, two other teams lose.
Leicester can even draw. The luxury of a draw, we can stay up. It's a 95% chance of us going down, so say 538.com, which is what Michael was referring to before, which means that in 19 scenarios out of 20, we don't survive. So it is a slim chance. We're probably going down, I think, fair to say.
Yeah, I keep looking to my left. I've got the big screen where you're recording the podcast into Audition, and there's a bit that says, zero problems detected. And my eye keeps being drawn to that and going, that's a lie. We have lots of problems. And I don't think we can solve them.
We've got more problems than Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, Michael, what have we got on this week's propaganda? Do we do the mega mix? It definitely is a mega mix of misery, isn't it, this week?
Yeah, there's not a lot of hope. I think maybe there might be one person who's got a bit of the Moscow's anything can happen about them. But generally speaking, no, it's bad.
Fucking shite. Honestly, lads, what the fuck was that? Went in front, better side, game was there to be won, let them back into it, no fight, no passion, no hope.
Well, lads, it's nearly done. Another shit show of a season with not much to write home about, and to be honest, they can all go on their posh holidays and fuck off for me.
I knew it was going to be bad when one of my parishioners told me at the end of church, hey, you might not want to look at the lead score right now. Oh, dear. In the words of my much-beloved late father, well, shit.
It really is quite something to go from being the best coached, most coached team under Bielsa to be uncoached. Like Marsh basically uncoached us. For fucking months. Christ almighty. The players are lost. They don't know what's coming next. They don't know where to be on the pitch. They don't know how to pass each other. Oh, God. Fucking relegation.
I had a funny thought on my nightly dog walk. You know, people are saying, oh, well, if we get relegated, at least we'll like win a load of games next season. We'll hang on to most of our players. We can play some of the youth team, really get them good experience in the Championship. What if it's not that simple? Is this too early to be thinking about this kind of stuff? That if we just never have a plan of how to have the ball, we can never win a game in the Championship? Have I gone too much like Michael, kind of doom escalation here?
We looked every single bit a relegated side. We looked like bottom three fodder today. They completely dominated us. We score the goal, great early goal, and like every other game, you know, that just means absolutely nothing. We spend the next 15 minutes being limp and allowing them to control the game. And, of course, they get the equaliser. You know what? Championship next year. I'm coming over from Australia. Coming over in November. Getting my Leeds tattoo. I'm a fucking idiot. But I love this club.
I've been thinking for several weeks that we're going to be relegated. I did think that for a lot of last season as well. But, you know, maybe this is just the way that I have to protect myself from disappointment. It's more just that, you know, we're still alive essentially because individual moments – can change a season when there's so few points on the board, right? Like if Bamford puts in that goal against Leicester, like the from 1 yard, then we stay, you know, we stay up maybe. And I suppose it's also like that at the other end. Like, you know, if Kiko Casilla doesn't run into the back of Liam Cooper, maybe we win that semifinal and we're promoted a season earlier. You know, in both cases, Leeds makes you tear your hair out. But I would much rather be in the case where we're at least playing well some of the time, because tuning into games I don't want to watch is just getting tiresome.
Absolutely.
I think that's the thing. The stat about we've won 11 games since Bielsa left, you really feel it, don't you?
Yep.
Like every week you just think...
Didn't win many before he went either.
No, it's basically been two full seasons of losing games, hasn't it?
Mm. It's not been much fun, has it?
No, we've had some right pastings in there, yeah, as well.
And the Premier League, barring that first season, even then, people are misremembering how much fun it was. It wasn't that much fun until we got probably to about February, March time when you thought we might do this. And even then, it took a long time for people to fully believe that we were going to stay up.
I think it's when we beat Fulham, wasn't it, that we got to 32 points and there was a 10-point gap or something to the bottom three and everyone was like, okay.
But what if they string together three wins?
I think this will probably be all right now.
Also, we weren't there.
Mm. Yeah.
That goes under the radar a little bit. I think that there was always the quote attributed to Victor Orta that if we'd got relegated in the season when we weren't allowed in, he was going to throw himself in the river. And then given the way that the team has actually played since we were allowed back in, it's all just gone down at that point. No point keeping us in the division so that we could all come back and see that.
The river's still there, Victor, by the way.
It does feel
yeah,
like...
he didn't say he'd stay in it. He just said he'd probably do like a... People keep doing it, York races, don't they? Jump in, splash about, and then get out again safely.
Yeah, fair enough.
Shake all the water off like a dog on the riverbank.
I do wonder if my ambivalence is just down to what the Premier League is and has become in our absence. It's because it's not a very lovable thing, is it? It's very corporate. It's very sterile. Things like the Premier League anthem. I hate VAR. It's been great watching loads of great footballers come to Elland Road. Unfortunately, it's not been great watching them take us apart most of the time. Mm. So I can do without that. I mean, I can watch them on my telly if I want to. The thing. I don't have to go to Elland Road to watch them and be miserable.
We can go back to what I used to say before we got promoted, which was that my dream scenario would be winning the championship every year and then staying in the championship to defend it. Yeah. Just be the best team in the championship and don't worry about getting involved in the Premier League, because trying to break into the top half, you know, it's a little bit distorted this year because Brighton and Brentford have both done it, but they've both done it after, particularly in Brighton's case, it's taken years of, you know, we were talking about them never being able to win more than 9 games a season. And then it turns out that while they were doing that, they were actually building a really strong club in the background, but it takes years.
And £500 million.
And a lot of money. And then Brentford, similar thing, they did most of their growing in the Championship so that they arrived in decent condition in the Premier League. But it's still, because they've gone up and it's been 2 seasons, bish-bash, it looks like overnight success. But those things do take a long, long time, which... is maybe part of the problem at Leeds, because after once we got to this idea of the 49ers taking over by a certain date, all the time frame shift. You're no longer on a long-term project of like we're planning for 10 years in the Premier League doing this. It's we're planning until somebody else comes in and starts another plan. So long-term ability to break into what's going on at the top of the table was kind of became, we made that more difficult for ourselves. And now look.
I like what you wrote on the blog about that. I did like it because, yeah, we forgot to tend to the here and now because we were planning for a future that now won't arrive, as many people thought. But it's funny, isn't it? Like looking at like Brentford and even Brighton, maybe to an extent, you wonder where will they be in 5 years' time? Will they be able to sustain top 6, 7? Well, it's tough, isn't it?
Look at who's going down this year. Like Leicester and Southampton were for years well-run clubs. The Leicester model, Southampton have tried. They were obviously in the same transfer market as us for a couple of years, trying to buy the same players, people who could get from, who were doing well in France or whatever, and you buy them for 12 million and you do well and you sell them on and it works till it doesn't.
Yeah.
Southampton have done exactly what we were trying to do this year, more than they have done in previous seasons. I think they've had the balance better in previous years because obviously they've been mid-table. But with Ralph Hasenhüttl, pure Red Bull running through his veins, and then the idea of that being the right style of football to develop young footballers, and then they got this mad intake of kids basically, and their team feels a little bit like ours in the way that Sam Allardyce was struggling with the squad against West Ham, where he it's clear with Allardyce he's put the most experienced team he can on the pitch in every single game. So Robles is there. Harrison plays no matter what. Rodrigo starts. Forshaw starts when he's fit. It's all who is oldest and fit. And then when he turns around, and then maybe it's coincidence, maybe it's not, but once players like Somerville and Nyonto and Greenwood start, the emphasis on the pitch moves to the younger end. We're not as good because they just aren't as experienced at the Premier League, and they've never been put in the situation of trying to battle against relegation before. And Southampton have done exactly the same, where they've got the old ones, Shea Adams, James Ward-Prowse, Kyle Walker-Peters, other people with triple-barreled names, and then just a bunch of, 20-year-olds. And Lavia looks like a fantastic player, but he would be better for what they were going through in 5 years rather than now. And so neither us or Southampton really had a plan to get through where we are now so that the young players that they bought can be any use, because now they just get sold to somebody else.
And part of the reliance on that method is that the teams that come up, at least a couple of them bounce straight back down, and they've not done that this year. No. So it's kind of ruined it.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you're looking at those teams and just going back to the point on like Brighton and Brentford. Brighton are probably, like you said, because they've been here longer, are insured against it a bit more, but you wonder what happens to Brentford post Thomas Frank. They're one coaching appointment away from maybe it tipping the other way a little bit. Same could be said for Brighton if they continue to sell people, but the model doesn't quite, sustain itself, or they hit one bad year, or the next coaching appointment doesn't quite work in the same way. But then you could say the same of Fulham, Palace, even Wolves. We're going down the entire division in that bottom half, right down to including Everton, who are just outside the bottom three at the minute. None of them are particularly... They're one bad year away from being in a lot of trouble, aren't they? It's horrible.
I mean, Moscow, you were saying earlier in the season, weren't you, that to get relegated, you normally have to do something worse than just being bad. And we've successfully done that this year.
Yeah, we really caught up. Because at the time, well, I was saying, it did just seem like we just had a bad team. That was pretty much the limit of it. But then the way it has unravelled quite quickly and just how bad that team was has really become much clearer.
Yeah,
over the course of the season.
Well, on that, let's hear from Luke Ayling post-match.
Yeah, very disappointed. We started the game well. We got 1-0 up and then we conceded a goal again, and then we come out half-time and we feel okay, and then the second half's just not good enough. We just can't seem to go again, then we put so much into the first half, and in the second half we just have nothing. So it's very disappointing.
Yeah, as you said there, you start the game so well with such intensity. Can you put your finger on where that has slipped?
Yeah, I think in year goes past, and I think teams have feared us when it comes to a running point of view and our fitness and stuff, and I just don't feel like it's there. Then this season, we start so well. We started bright. We score a goal. Then they score a goal. That can happen at this level, but then we come out for the second half and then we just can't go again. So, yeah, it's just, yeah, then Justin, that is very disappointing.
Can't seem to go again, have nothing. In years past, teams have feared our running and fitness, things from that point of view, but that's just not there. Do we go back to last summer and the lack of prep work?
Well, we had to bring in someone who would do less physical fitness work, didn't we? And then may have swung too far the other way.
Well, that's the thing. And it's not just last summer, because this season we had pre-season, we had the Queen's season, we had the World Cup where they all went to Spain and did some training. So three chances to get everybody fit.
Staff as well, Moscow. You've mentioned staff before.
Yeah, but it's sort of, it's weird. This was mentioned on the Guardian Football Weekly and podcast. I was listening to that this morning. And they put it down to Bielsa burnt them out, as if that's still the problem. I mean, he ruins the fitness of footballers.
He didn't burn Weston McKennie and Mark Rocker out, did he?
No, exactly. And I think the problem is, it comes a step after that, and it's where everything comes down to. It's the choice of Jesse Marsh to replace Marcelo Bielsa. And it's not even, this isn't really criticism of Marsh himself. I think we flagged this when he turned up. There's all the interviews from his former players where they talk about what Jesse Marsh does when he goes into a team and what his unique selling point is. There's a lot of people out there who will talk about how his pre-seasons are the hardest that players have ever had. He works them like no other coach. He really gets the fitness levels up there. They're drained in pre-season, like basically what Bielsa did. And he was the choice to reduce the training levels to something more manageable. And that's not something he's ever done before. And because his one of his main tools is he goes into a club and he increases the training levels to make everybody fitter, one of his major tools to improve a team is taken away because you couldn't really make Bielsa's team any fitter. You can't increase Jack Harrison's fitness beyond where it was. But then also you're asking him to then reduce the stress levels or the overtraining levels. And it's not something he does. So you've just put completely the wrong person in to solve whatever the problem was. If fitness was a problem, if overtraining was a problem, Jesse Marsh was not the solution, because all he would do at his previous teams is train people harder. Mm. And then he's the one saying, they've been overtrained, I've got to reduce the training. How are you going to do that? Well, it's not something he's ever done before.
And it was all different. It was a different type of training as well. I think that's when you start to get into the nuance of it. It was all about explosive runs to press a ball, say three of you doing the all-in thing, you know, where you're swamping people to make recoveries, ball recoveries, as opposed to, let's say, stamina work, you know, because we know famously that Bielsa had the running track put in at Thorpe Arch. And that's obviously going to build up long-term stamina. And I'm sure it's absolutely no fun, but it's the basis of any good season, isn't it, is long-term stamina, as, you know, as we will testify, I'm sure.
As well, when Marsh came in, at other clubs he's had coaching staff, he arrived at Leeds with like, well, we've got Cameron Toshack.
That's what I meant about staff, I said to Moscow
Jacko
before,
can step up. Like, if he normally relied upon those people to do a lot of the work for him, which is not unusual, I don't think, in coaching. A lot of managers over the years,
everyone has a fitness coach, don't they?
A lot of managers over the years have essentially had some broad ideas, but then they delegate stuff to coaching staff and they have to do it. And if the coaching staff aren't used to doing it in the way he wanted it to be done,
or are simply not there, yeah, they just weren't there, were they, for a long time?
So yeah, I mean, even this summer, I mean, Christ, this needs picking over at the end of the season, really. But like the late appointments of his team for this season. I know there was the emergency stuff last year, but then you have a summer to get it right. And even then, you're waiting around for fucking Chris Armas to eventually become available. And then he turns up and it's too bloody late and probably a shit appointment anyway. So
it's asking Marsh to do stuff that isn't really suited to him and then giving him no help to do it. So great start. And then it's where a lot of this sort of goes above him is what we're talking about. And it more and more sharply feels like a sense that if they just got rid of Bielsa, then everything else would be fine. And that's not been the case at all. If there were problems with what Bielsa were doing, they needed better solutions than just him not being there. And then the other aspect of this as well is, I think, the squad. And that's something that, you know, Bielsa got all the flack for wanting a small squad. I feel like I should have done the numbers on this, but I didn't. I feel like the squad is even smaller. And certainly in terms of play, like when you look at, and Allardyce has gone straight to this and said, I haven't got enough players to do anything. And you think, one of the other criticisms, I feel like I'm defending Bielsa against a lot of this for some reason, but it all kind of comes back to how we've moved on from it and how we've solved the perceived problems of that time.
Did Arteta not say that he wanted an 18-man squad? Like, he said he wanted a small squad, didn't he? Like, it's one of the things I'll keep. He did an interview to that effect, no?
Yeah, he did. So it made it seem like it was less his idea and more a club, less Bielsa's idea and more a club policy, but it's certainly something that Bielsa agreed with and Guardiola agrees with it. They don't like having people hanging around not doing much. But the players who were hanging around last season, there was some criticism. Charlie Creswell, Jamie Shackleton, Tyler Roberts, Joffrey Gelhart, all young players, all in different positions, all available. And then this year it's like, no, we'll send them out on loan to get experience. And now this year, well, we need them really, don't we? We could really do with a Charlie Creswell at this point, or we could do with Joffrey being available off the bench, because we haven't got a striker on the bench. Last season, we had Joe Gelhart, we had Tyler Roberts. Whether they're good enough for the Premier League or not is kind of irrelevant, because what we have now, Allardyce doesn't think he's good enough for the Premier League. He turns around, looks at £35 million worth of Jorginho Rutter, and he'd probably love to swap him with Tyler Roberts, because at least Tyler Roberts has played some football matches at this level before. But they're all off in other places doing other things. And even when we're talking about the rebuilding with the youth, the planning for the future, Darko JB and Matt Yo Joseph are off playing tournament football internationally. They're not available to us either. So that then brings us back to the, as you move up through the squad, why is Diego Llorente in Rome? Why is Matthias Klick in Washington, D.C. when we don't have any midfielders and we've got Rasmus Christiansen playing centre-back and Luke Ayling at right-back is absolutely knackered? Like, it would be like, whatever you think about Diego Llorente's qualities as a footballer, and he actually did all right with Rome in between hamstring injuries, so he probably would be injured if he was still here. But it would be nice to have the option of a Spanish international centre-back instead of a right-back when we need centre-halves to play.
And still no backup left-back.
And then,
which is the thing we've been asking for, well, ever since we saw Junior Firpo play.
Still not capable, first-choice left-back.
And when we're talking about solving fitness overall, Bamford and Rodrigo's constant injury records makes you think, you know, was Rutter the right signing? Was Sonny Perkins the right player? Like, we need that player in between to just stop assuming that one or the other of Bamford will be available and have a third option, which is something I think I've argued the opposite of in the past. You know, this is the hypocrisy of hindsight, but it's obviously become a glaring gap that there is nothing in between Bamford and Rodrigo.
It says, but as you said before, these things haven't been a problem until they become a problem. You used that phrase earlier, and that's what it is, isn't it? Loads of people have said, well, I don't think we've quite got enough up there. And then we get the programme notes saying we've got two international number nines and one of the best hot English striking prospects. And then actually two of them have been injured on and off all season again.
Yeah.
And then the other one's out on loan.
So when I've said before, like, you know, we don't need to, it's kind of the warm bodies thing. Do we need to sign Shea Adams, for example, who's taking Southampton down?
Yes.
Anyway, well, it wasn't necessarily a yes until you're letting Joe Gellhart go on loan to Sunderland. And then it's suddenly like, well, you're putting even more on Rutter coming in, but then he would be useful for us now. Click would be useful for us now. And the only reason Click isn't here is because we hammered Brendan Aaronson to the point where he's looks a shadow of the player who arrived in summer. And then Llorente isn't here, and neither is Charlie Creswell. One of them would be useful now. So we had some reasonable centre-back cover.
Need a number nine, Moscow. We've got one on loan at Fulham.
Well, yeah, even Dan James would be useful at this point. And then Stuart Dallas being injured all year and Adam Forshaw's fitness never being recovered. How Weston McKennie exists, but that wasn't even till January. Who was Stuart Dallas's replacement? Was it Rocker?
He was Calvin's replacement.
Yes, he was. So was it Tyler Adams? Adams is Adam Forshaw's replacement, isn't he? So there seems to have been no idea that, you know, Stuart Dallas, who could play left back, could play midfield, could play on the wing, you know, very important player, leadership role, high quality, real key person. I don't know if anybody noticed that he literally snapped his thigh and is not going to be able to play, but there just doesn't seem to have been like a big, oh, we got Darko JB. Like, that's probably the move. And when you look through the squad planning of like, well, Stuart Dallas will be fit at some point, and then JB will come along the pathway at this point and he'll be fine. And JB might be great in the future, but again, where is he now? He's off playing tournament football, so he can't do anything to help us at the moment. And it's clear, like Allardyce, when he was saying at the weekend, it's like, oh, you know, I worked out the problems quite quickly. I'm not going to talk about them now. But then every other question that he answered was, I don't have anybody on the bench. The squad isn't strong enough. I don't have a centre forward. It's obvious that he's looking at the way the squad has been built, and it's just disbelieving. And, you know, we don't really need to keep the sum total. Allardyce's start is worrying me because he's sort of like, well, you know, if they do want me to hang around to sort this out. No, you're right, Sam. But it's pretty basic. We don't need Sam Allardyce specifically to spot this. I'm sure Grathier, I think he was just a bit too... Actually, no, Grathier was doing it as well, because we said when Adam Forshaw came back fit, he was like, well, yeah, we don't have any centre midfielders, so I'm obviously glad he's fit again. Anybody with any sense has come in and gone, well, this squad is completely imbalanced, so you just need to buy some players in all the places where you don't have any players. So it's not going to be, you know, there's a lot of worry going into the summer. We don't have a director of football, we don't have a manager, we need to buy those players. It's pretty simple.
Takes us back to what Michael said. Sign all the left-backs and sign all the central midfielders. Anyway, us being exasperated, so were West Ham, confused by it all as well.
You know, I think those players, like you said, they're a team that are fighting for their lives. They didn't look like it today. You know, if I was there, I think that's a different...
I was a bit surprised because I've watched them the last couple of games. So they got they lost 2-1 at City. They put in a good fight. And then last week at home to Newcastle, they probably got stuck in. And I thought I was a bit worried coming here today because there's no pressure on us now. We're safe with the way results went yesterday. You know, we could have... A lot of players don't want to get injured. They don't want to miss out. All eyes on Prague now for this football club. I know there's one more game left in the Premier League, but I was a bit surprised of how bad Leeds were.
Yeah, no, that's it. You're sitting there saying they were fighting for their lives. They didn't look like it at all today. They just looked like a puppy rolling over and having his belly tickled. Right, look, they showed a bit of spirit for the first 5-10 minutes. They got their goal. And the worst thing that happened to them today was going 1-0 up. If you're scrapping to survive, you put a better shift in what they did today. We made them look as bad as they actually are.
I never really disliked Allardyce, but I think he's sort of mugged himself off a little bit in the press conference, and like he's obviously been targeting this game. And if he's been targeting this game, like, what the fuck has he been playing at? Because they was fucking dog shit today. Honestly, they were terrible.
Terrible. It's right. We were the second half. I'm just getting a drink here. I don't know why.
Until the microphones are coming back to start.
First,
pouring some water out.
Hang on a minute, everybody. I'm just going to go to the loo.
I remembered. I think that's why the second half was so weird to watch, because at some point you imagined we would push forward and like actually put some effort in. But Dan's, if you're not watching the video, it's Dan's urinated into a cup now. Giving it a good shake. Giving it a good ASMR stuff, this. Yeah, why didn't we try?
Hang on, I'm just going to put the lid back on the bottle. One second.
At any point. Very nice.
Because we're shit. Because they've lost all the confidence. They've never been in this scenario before. And they don't know what they're doing. They're panicking. Their asses have gone.
Players got younger, as we were saying before. The experience left from the field. All the players that kind of know what they're doing. Fitness-wise, I think Harrison must be injured as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Coming off every game on the hour without fail. And it'll be...
He's not playing badly either, I wouldn't say.
And we go back to the start of the season when everyone was like, why has Harrison suddenly gone off the boil? And it turned out he needed about 7 operations. And it's like... So we've never... There's another player who's not been fit all season and would make a great difference. So there's that. And then also, I think it's related to fitness and the whole thing as well. And Allardyce was talking about it. And Bielsa used to talk about it. And there's a bit of Marsh has mentioned it as well, of Allardyce is the most recent one, talked about it being lead boots. But when you don't win, you keep losing, you get beaten down all the time, and you start running as if you're wearing lead boots. He's saying, I'm trying to get the lead boots off them and put the light boots back on again. But for some reason, when we get to, and you could kind of see it in the celebrations for the first goal, Rodrigo running straight to Robbie Keane, and it all felt like, well, Robbie Keane has been telling him, you know, just take more chances, hit stuff on the volley, there's going to be a throw-in coming in, just whack it in the net, be confident, believe in yourself. And then he has that, and he runs. But then as soon as we concede, it seems like the lead boots come back on. And so Bielsa, when he talked about it, he used to say about how he couldn't believe that the players put so much effort in when they were getting beaten all the time. And he used to love the group of players that we had. He said they should be running much less than they are, but I can't fault their effort. They're a great bunch of lads. And Jesse Marsh put it in his own particular weird terms, but he had a bit of a point as well, where he's like, he said, I mean, it's such a stupid thing to say, but he did have a point of like, if we had got relegated last season, then he might have done better with them in the Championship, where they could have won more games. And while they were winning games, they could have learnt more about how he wanted them to play. That's the part where it starts to get stupid. Like, what is there to learn about fucking banging it at the penalty spot? But his idea was, it's very difficult for him to get his ideas across to players who are losing all the time because they can't build up that confidence in them. And
the they have no faith in the system because we keep losing. I can't believe it.
Yes.
Yeah, so you just need to believe more.
But, you know, he did have a point, though. I will give him the point that if we had been in the Championship where, you know, whatever system you're playing, and surely just like the fact that it's 46 games, you can win a few more of them, even if your win percentage is
so if we go down, I'll get awful to keep Rafinha, right? Which was basically the plan last season.
But yeah, so the psychology of it all as well, I think, combined with the fatigue, 2 years, like we're all pissed off with 2 years of watching them lose. Players like Ayling, Harrison, who I think are good professionals, also will be pissed off with 2 years of playing, losing football, because they can't be happy with the way that they've performed, particularly when injuries come into it. Someone like Harrison, who I think puts a lot of, you know, he seems like the perfect professional. And if injuries are preventing him from playing as much and contributing as much as he believes he can, frustrating. Same with Forshaw, can't get through an hour. How must that feel? You can't play more than an hour of football in a situation where it's really necessary. And Bamford, 2 years of just every time he tries to, you know, score a goal against Brentford, immediately injury your hamstring, celebrating. Try to come back last season, your plantar fascia snaps. Try to play now, your hamstring goes again. It must just grind you down. And then you have, you know, everybody looking on going, oh, why don't they run as much as they did when Bielsa was it? It's like, fucking hell. at some point.
I've had plantar fasciitis recently and it bloody hurts.
And now Rodrigo's got it.
Yeah, it really hurts. And I'm surprised he was still running around on it because I can't go up and down my stairs sometimes with this. It bloody kills.
You got the lift put in, haven't you?
Well, there is that. That's, yeah.
It's weird because the amount of money they get paid reduces the amount of sympathy that is available for footballers. But you do, when you think about the context of playing with an injury, like, I don't like getting a paper cut. I'm not going to go fucking running around with a...
Well, give up your paper round then. Give up your paper round and that can all stop. Anyway, listen, Alex wants to blame the players.
Whilst we've all accepted that there's been a lot of faults at the top this season, and undoubtedly there has, I think there does come a time when you need to point a finger at the players. On 86 minute, when your manager's shouting try when you're 2-1 down and you don't really look like you're trying, I think some questions need to be asked. Honestly, you know, over-entitled, not really arsed, and a big part of the reason that we are going to enjoy next season playing fucking Huddersfield again.
Yep.
This morning I drove in past Ellen Road because the way we come in and there's all the pictures of them on the northeast corner, and I must admit I did go past and go, loser, 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 fuck off, all of you. I mean,
any sympathy does erode when you watch that third goal.
Yeah. Just clueless, yeah. Flapping about, everyone rolling around on the floor.
Poor Brendan.
Like, did we manage to work out what happened to him yet?
I think he gets knocked over by Somerville, which is, and just, yeah, just goes flying. There's a screen, I've got a screen grab on my phone of him as the West Ham player's running away, and he's just, his legs are in the air. He's literally upside down.
That boy needs a year in the Championship to toughen him up.
But
he's going to get it.
The hilarious thing about that, well, not hilarious, and this is where you do, you know, have to ask questions about what the players are up to. All West Ham were doing was trying to waste time, and it was easier to score.
Yeah.
That is not a good advert. And yeah.
Should we hold it in the corner? Probably not. Point.
Nah,
just run round everyone and put it in.
Even if they win it back, what they can do, really.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's move on then from Leeds United because...
it's too much, isn't it?
It is too much. No, need to make yourself fit. Do you know what? It's spring. The sun is shining. We have our health, you know.
We might stay
You
up.
Don't. You've got plantar fasciitis.
I've got my health apart from that.
It's amputated the ankle, that'll be gone.
I've had to buy insoles. They were £40.
Were they £40? You've been praising those insoles. I didn't realise they were £40.
They've worked, though. They're actually fixing it. I know, mate. How do you feel about that?
Bloody hell, though.
Yeah, but it's worth it, isn't it? For your feet, for your health. You can't put a price on good health.
I suppose so. I mean, 40 quid's a lot, though.
If it was your back, which you whinge about fucking incessantly, you'd buy a £40 thing that you stick on your back, wouldn't you?
Backpack.
I'd buy it for you just to shut you up.
All right, you can do.
You'll appreciate this, and it maybe says something about the disparity in wages, but I saw a video of, I think it's Arsenal's Katie McCabe giving a pair of boots to a young fan, and she's about to hand them over, then she's like, oh, hold on a minute, and then it kind of cuts. She's come back, she says, I had to take the insoles out. And I bet it's because they're £40.
Yeah, there'll be some orthotics.
Oh, there'll be custom orthotics at football level,
There might be a boot sponsorship there, but I don't know if there's enough wages in Arsenal women for to be paying out for insoles. He can't give the insoles away to every passing child.
Thogden wouldn't have given them back, would they? You see that clip this week?
No.
Thogden. So he bumped into a kid. I presume it was outside. But he's a Bolton fan, isn't he?
What is a Thogden?
Thogden is that child blogger.
Oh, okay.
Does stuff with his dad on YouTube.
Yeah. And
football
he was,
stuff.
And he was over in Qatar, wasn't he? Saying, what a great bunch of lads they all were. I think somebody got hold of him and said, say some nice things about Qatar because we're paying for you to be here, or whatever the dynamic was. I don't know. But anyway, he got copped a lot of flack for that. Anyway, so he was doing one of his more recent things. And I think at the end of the game, end of the season or whatever, some kid has got the keeper's glove, which, you know, nice little souvenir. Mm. Thogden walks up to him afterwards, after the end of the game, and basically says, can I have that? And this kid's like, you can see it, and the kid's pleading almost like, no, this is mine. And he ends up giving it to him, I think, because he's got a camera in his face, and Thogden takes the glove. And there's been a right backlash for it. He just basically like nicked a glove off a kid.
Whose glove?
The keeper.
Whose goalkeeper?
Presumably
the Bolton goalkeeper. Jussi Eskelinen.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't the Bolton goalkeeper his brother?
Thogden's brother.
I've got a feeling he is. I've got a feeling he's on loan. His brother plays for Man City and he's on loan there. I'm sure I've seen this in a video.
Either way, if
it's his brother's glove, just ask him.
Just go, I can have one of your gloves.
Go to his bedroom, nick something.
But yeah,
got some of his socks too.
A right backlash on it. Yeah, anyway, it's worth looking up to get the actual full story. I was going to say, let's move on to other clubs because Leeds are making this miserable. And I know Man City was described as the Death Star, wins another title this week, which I liked a great deal because that's basically what it is. They won the title. Nah, big deal, whatever. Enjoy it.
It's worthless.
Yeah, pointless. With what is it, 115 infractions of financial fair play? Well done. Glad to be out of the Premier League. Never wanted to be here in the first place, did we? Anyway, City Extra always bring us a smile, is what I was going to say with that bloody long run-up.
So this is from his live stream that he did after winning the league. And he was...
Which one?
What do you mean, which one?
City Extra, there's two of them.
Oh, the older one.
Oh, okay. Big bro.
He's doing... I think he's trying to do music.
We have to say, by the way, we need to figure out what to do with propaganda next season as well. We should just say it. Please, can we keep tabs on this lot?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because I'll miss them if we don't.
Well, they'll be in the Northern League if there's any justice.
So he's about to do a musical thing, but this is just him getting hyped in the way he does.
Because Manchester City people are Premier League champions, man. Once again, unbelievable scenes. Can you believe it, boys? Unbelievable. Let me go with a speech. I'm going to go for a speech, boys. You get it? Yes, people.
Is he going to rap?
Better get on with it.
He's just...
Fire in the chat, please. Fire in the chat. Fire in the chat, people. Fire in the chat. Let's go. Are you firing the chat?
That was it, was it?
Fire in the chat.
There was fire in the chat once he started asking for it.
Do you know what that reminded me of? That. You know, like in the BBC News when they're counting down to the hour?
It's the BBC News thing.
Oh, right, it was.
Which I don't think he realises. I think he just thinks it's a really good tune, but it's BBC News.
It's like some sort of deep house underground number.
Yeah.
It's found from...
I will say, this went on for about 5 minutes.
Good job Hugh Edwards doesn't do that, does he? You're waiting for the headlines, like fire in the chat. Like, I want to know what's happened to the economy. Fire in the chat. Come on, I'm getting ready for the Queen is dead.
Today, fire in the chat.
Fire in the chat.
Her Majesty, etc. Right, so what's this then, Michael?
So this is what he goes on to.
Right.
The season... We've not had it all our own way, people. Another loss at Spurs. Haaland makes us worse. All eras must come to an end. Kevin De Bruyne is finished. Jack Grealish. He's not good enough for this club. We had Mahrez. He's too old. But I'll tell you one thing, people. I'll tell you one thing. This club has heart. This club has spirit. Thought was going to get a drop there, innit? So it's okay, we'll continue.
Thought was going to... What they do have is access to the unlimited wealth of a Middle East gas... There's rich another, nation.
It goes on for... I just stopped it there because he was expecting a drop, and it's quite funny that it goes wrong. But it goes on for like another 5 minutes of him just describing the least jeopardy in the season. He's like, there was that time when we didn't score in the opening 20 minutes against Southampton.
Calvin Phillips. Bit unfit.
Thankfully, we had another seven brilliant central midfielders, so it didn't matter too much.
Did you see that Calvin nearly scored, by the way?
Oh, no.
Against Chelsea, yeah.
Not watched any of it.
I think he hit the post, yeah.
Not watched a bit of it.
It was the one thing I have seen was the players, and this is just a tribute to a fine Yorkshire upbringing.
Do you want me to put some sort of...
no, I don't.
slow house beat underneath this that coincides with the seconds?
The players were turning up for the post-season party. And,
do you want me to put the first bit of that first clip on just so you can do it?
And the some of them arrived in a minibus as a group, and obviously... because he was raised by fine Yorkshire people. Erling Haaland is up front with the bus driver, and you can see through the window that the first thing he does is shake hands with the bus driver and thank him for bringing them to the nightclub. And then he gets out, and it's just like, what a... Alfie's raised a good one. I know he plays for them and he's nothing to do with us, but it takes a village, doesn't it? So I like to think that the involvement that, you know, Uncle David Hopkin, I don't know if... Dave Weatherall is godfather to him or something like that, but you know, he's been raised well, and it's just those little details that always seem to stand out with Haaland, and also him running around just swearing on every TV interview we could find.
Because he doesn't care.
No, he's good. He doesn't have to.
No, he can afford not to. Let's move on to one of our favourites. Stevie's back then. Stevie Nicol, former Liverpool defender.
Do you think he thanks bus drivers?
No.
They're just doing their job.
But he doesn't shake the hand. It'll be a nod and a cheers.
Yeah.
Which I think's enough.
Yeah, he'll know.
I feel like if everyone shook the bus driver's hand, it'd slow the services down as everyone's getting off.
Bump elbows.
Think if it's like a busy city centre stop where you know one of those ones where everyone gets off and you've got to go down the line.
To be clear, it was a hired minibus. It wasn't,
well, yeah,
he didn't get off the bus to Stockport or something, a double decker.
Do you, as a rule, thank the bus driver as you get off?
Yeah, you've got to thank the bus driver. It's fucking horrible not to.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do as well.
You got to. Oh, the bus drivers, they are pretty grumpy often.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah,
part of the deal. Well, and it helps as well because when you are thanking the bus driver, you don't necessarily want some like big cheerful conversation to result of it. You just want a
cheers, pal.
Yeah.
Cheers. A nod, wink. Mm. That's it. Yeah,
not wink. That's weird.
No, I can't see it.
Stop being suggestive to the bus driver on your way out.
the one on my route, sexy.
That's right. That
I like him.
They called him love on the way in and wink on the way out.
That is one thing, by the way. If you're abroad or far outside Yorkshire, that bus drivers will call you love as a grown man.
Mm. Yeah.
All right, love.
Yeah. That's why Haaland gets on with them.
Yeah.
Because he knows he's been raised in the north, so he's no fear of bus drivers.
So before we get on to Steve, let's finish on him, as we've talked about people occasionally being a bit of a grumpy knobhead. Shall we hear from Phil Neville?
Yeah, okay then. Fine.
He was cross about a journalist and it completely falls apart for him.
Can I finish speaking? Are you going to interrupt? Can I finish speaking? Okay, because I don't interrupt your question. Okay, so don't interrupt mine. Show some fucking respect. Sorry for the language. What was the question? Ask me the question then, please, Franco.
I forgot the question. So by all means, do now interrupt me because I've made a complete tit of this. Phil Neville. I don't even know he was managing anywhere.
Is he still Inter Miami?
Yes. So, you know who the president of Inter Miami is?
Will Smith.
No. Come on. Who was employed?
It's Beckham. I know it's Beckham.
Who was given Phil Neville a job? I don't think Michael knows.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah, so, and also then, so who is...
I was going to guess the rich fella from Salford.
So, who is in the team?
Paul Scholes, John O'Shea.
No, you need to come closer.
Gary Walsh.
No, closer.
I don't know.
His son.
Oh, okay.
I think he must be in the B team now.
Is he a Nepo baby?
Yeah, highly. And Beckham's son was there as well, but obviously he's been loaned to Brentford B this season.
Do Brentford B call him BBEE?
No, but they should.
They really should.
But yeah, the Herons, as Inter Miami are known, had, yeah, Phil Neville, one of his other spiky moments, is trying to insist that there's no nepotism involved with having brought his son from Manchester United's youth team to Valencia's, to was it Valencia where Gary was manager?
Yes.
Yeah,
badly as well, very badly.
From there to Inter Miami, it's just all the queen. It's like, no, he's not getting any special treatment. And he brought him on in a, as a substitute in a, in like a friendly against, I think it might have been against Barcelona or something like that, like the biggest games, like they got, gave them a chance.
Yes, it was. It was the preseason, wasn't it?
Yeah. And he was like, no, that wasn't favourite.
In fact, I'm fairly sure that might have been when Rafinha scored his first goal for Barcelona.
Maybe. That rings a bell. Yeah.
Oh, he definitely scored. Anyway, Stevie, come on, give us Stevie.
Thank you to everyone who's tagged me in this, because loads of people pointed him in the direction of this one.
Steve Nicol, former Liverpool defender, now works for ESPN, has become a bit of a cult figure on this show because of his dour and often strange behaviour as well. He likes to eat, we know from his player profiles in the past, bags and bags of crisps, potato chips.
And we're about to learn here, loves drinking too.
Yep.
I think Moscow discovered this story first of all, a tale of him setting Gary Ablett's wife's hair on fire. I can't remember where you discovered this in the first place.
Were they filming Pepsi advert or something?
No, not that one. Anthea Turner was there, got blown up by a motorbike.
Right.
That's another famous clip. But so this is the first time I've heard Stevie talking about it.
In his own words.
In his own words. So here he is. He's setting the scene.
Oh, dear. Well, this is a long day. This was the semi-final of the FA Cup. Liverpool were playing Crystal Palace at Villa Park. And I was injured. So I was going down on the bus with all the staff and all the wives and all that in the morning of the game. And so we started drinking on the bus on the way there at like 10 o'clock in the morning. So obviously they played the game, we got beat, more drink on the way back on the bus. And Kenny had organised to go to a Chinese restaurant, the Mandarin in Liverpool, with all the players and all the wives after the game, because obviously we thought we were going to win and all the rest of it. So by the time I got there, I could hardly stand up. I was like absolutely annihilated. And it actually worked out because, as you can imagine, after losing this cup semi-final FA Cup, I mean, everybody's devastated.
Yeah.
But because I was so drunk, it kind of loosened up the mood a little bit.
So this is BBC Sounds, by the way. You can find it on BBC Sounds, Sacked in the Morning podcast. Same thing. Was he talking about drinking on the bus on the way to the game?
Yeah.
Like, so, not the day before?
No, so it sounds like this is the day of the game, and because he's not playing, he's just thought, fucking great, I can get arsed.
I was thinking, we keep talking about, and we've mentioned this before, how do we get Brendan Aaronson's strength up? He needs a day like this. Because he's only 22, isn't he? And he was saying, like, his first taste of beer was the celebrations in Salzburg when they won the league last year. He's like, oh, because, you know, he's too young legally to drink in America. He needs a day like that. Just getting absolutely smashed on a coach.
Shall we offer, Brendan, if you're listening?
Yeah.
We don't know where. We'll take you somewhere.
Just a real heavy day of pints in the sunshine that will leave him struggling with the hangover for days. Obviously,
he'll join up as a boy and he'll leave as a man.
Not encouraging anybody binge drinking, don't do it unless
unless you really enjoy it.
I would stop at a sensible 4 cans of the Square Balls beer from North Brewing, as long as you are over 18 and drink responsibly. But Brendan, you are over 18 and you are responsible in every aspect. Just, yeah, cut loose.
There's an artist called Mr. Bingo, and one of the things he sold on his website, as well as obviously actual artwork he'd done, was get shit-faced on a train. And you bought the right to, he said he would buy you a return train ticket to somewhere and you were in drinks for the train. Yeah. That was an experience you could have.
Yeah, I think
it's like
doing
one of those red letter days where you could buy a trip in a balloon. Or
yeah, get shit faced on a train was the thing you could do. 20 people bought it. I've just found it. So there you go. It's a good trip for him. Anyway, so Steve, he thinks he's lightened the mood by being here absolutely leathered.
Because who doesn't love seeing a mate who's been on the ale all day when you've not?
Exactly, the confidence of a very drunk man. Being like, I'm doing a lovely job.
And
here.
You've lost to what would have been, I think, second division Crystal Palace in an FA Cup semi-final.
So we picked up the story in the Chinese restaurant.
We're sitting having the meal and firing away, and I'm acting stupid as usual. And Gary Ablett's wife
was sat next to me. Now, back in the day with the big lion's mane, you know, all the girls had the big lion's mane's hair, but she had like 4 gallon of lacquer on it. And so it was like a big bush on the top of her head. And of course, I'm sitting smoking and I'm sitting there looking at it. And for some reason, I'm thinking, I wonder what would happen if I lit that. I mean, it's just kind of a normal thing to do. But it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Oh, man.
I got my lighter and I'm sitting there like that and I'm like, yeah, I'll just try. And I went like that and I flicked it. This thing went up. This thing just went up.
I was just dying to ask you. What did you think was going to happen?
As you do when you've had a couple of people, do you know what I mean?
Oh, brilliant.
And I'm standing banging her on the head. And then Gary Ablett's like, what are you doing? And he's grabbing his jacket and putting his jacket on her head and all.
I take it she was okay.
Please tell me she's all right. Please tell me she's okay.
Oh, she's okay now. I think it's grown back now. Might have taken a couple of years, but it's quite good back.
He thinks it's all a jolly joke. Let me read this to you. Pyromania is a type of impulse control disorder that is characterized by being unable to resist starting fires. People with pyromania know that setting fires is harmful, but setting fires is the only way they can relieve their built-up tension, anxiety, or arousal.
I mean, to set fire to a person is...
it's a bit out there,
isn't it? It's psychotic, isn't it?
I think so, Michael.
You know, it's like, you know what you do when you're drunk. You just think, I'll just see if I can... I'll just try and scar someone for life. Okay.
And that's how he made it out as well. Like, you know what it's like when you've had a few drinks. Your first impulse is to set fire to someone.
The other thing I took from that is there's another aspect of Brendan Aaronson's improvement, smoking.
Yeah, definitely.
So if we got him...
Beer and tabs.
No filters.
Yeah, if we've got him on a...
take the filters out?
Yeah, no. He's not having filters.
No.
If we've got him drinking on a train or on a bus, obviously not on the train or on the bus, but yeah, in the beer garden, wherever it goes to, pack of 20 in each pub.
From my stalking of his girlfriend on Instagram, I did...
That's a very emotive word, Michael.
I did discover him looking terrified in a cat cafe the other day.
Yeah, they keep putting him in these... they keep doing these wholesome, nice things, going to cafe. No, they need pub, beer.
My other promise to you, Brendan, I won't try and take a single picture of you. Because it looks like at the moment, if he has any sort of day out, there has to be like at least a dozen pictures of the same thing happening, which I would just find soul-destroying. I'd be like... Let's just sit here and enjoy this food, shall we?
Maybe around closing time, there does need to be like one photograph taken of him so that the next day he can be shown it and go, see how much better you look, see how happy you were, see how good and strong you felt. Like, this is you just after you'd fought that policeman, which you would never normally have done, would you? So you see the benefits.
Let's close out on a soundtrack, a relegation soundtrack. This Billy B, then, is it?
Yeah, he's put this together. I'm not sure. I think he might have been getting shit-faced on a train ahead of sending this.
Relegate again, ole, ole. Relegate again, ole. Fucking hell. Marcelo Bielsa. Fucking not a fuck off. Championships fucking meant. Fuck off.
And Brendan, that's how we want to hear you at the end of the night. Let's fix up Brendan with Billy B.
Yeah.
Oh, dear me. Well, there you go. That wraps up Propaganda. We've got some Propaganda Extra coming.
Got a little quiz.
Nice. Beautiful, beautiful. Mm. Right. I'm looking forward to that, Michael. What's that about?
It's called La Celeste. Or Midwest. It's a geography-based quiz about whether stuff's nearer to Uruguay or Jesse Marsh's hometown.
No, that sounds good.
It does sound good, you're right.
I'm looking forward to that. You'll have to play it properly, Dan. Come on. Put some effort in.
It's pure guesswork, so it'll be perfect for you.
Oh, great.
Because I know you know nothing about football.
Absolutely no football knowledge. Right, thanks for joining us on this one. We'll see you soon.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.